one of the things that you talk that you kind of hit upon that I just would love to know more about, because I think one of the things that really makes me excited just to hear about your trajectory through the academy, but also looking at your research, is also kind of hearing a little bit more about your background as a poet. And because I know you're an accomplished poet. And so one of the things that I guess I am very, very interested in is, has your background as a poet really influenced your definition of Kairos and kind of how you view that?
I think what it has done is it's made invention and Kairos really central to what I do. My beginning work on the Book of Kells, I was really looking at invention techniques that they were using. Mm-hmm. And that's still extremely intriguing to me. And I think I've unraveled it to some extent, but it's really hard to prove that this was what they were up to with it. In the Book of Kells, one of the things that they did is they figured out ways of moving text and displacing it to make room for imagery. But the imagery was never, of course, random imagery. It was very important. And one of the things that the monks were devoted to becoming monks as part of being closer to God. And John Caution had this sense that one wanted to move into a state where they were in a constant, within a constant remembrance of God. Mm-hmm. Now, how do you think about God every moment of the day? That is quite a tough task. But when you start playing with imagery, suddenly there's kind of some clues on how to do this. And one of the traditions has a lion as a symbol for Christ. But the lion portrays many different aspects of Christ. And one of the things that was believed about the lions, and this comes out of a book called The Physiologus, which goes back to Greek and Egyptian tales of animals, it was believed that the lion actually slept with its eyes open, and so that it was forever awake. This particular trait of the lion was associated with Christ having control over life and death, that even on the cross, his spirit was watchful. It was also believed that lions were born, stillborn, and that after 3 days, that the male lion would roar or breathe into the cub's face and bring them to life. So here we've got the imagery of the crucifixion and resurrection. It was believed that the lion only revealed itself to whomever it wanted to see it, so that if it was, you know, out and a hunter was stalking it, it was believed that a lion would actually use its tail to cover its tracks. So when you move into the Book of Kells, you find passages where suddenly, if you read that passage and think that passage in these 4 or 5 different attributes of Christ, it has you inventing ways of seeing into Scripture that you would not see into Scripture otherwise. In the Book of Kells, in some of the passages where these lions appear, I was trying to remember the exact Matthew verse, chapter and verse, and I won't pull that out of my head. But there's a moment where Christ is gathering his apostles, and one of them says, well, you know, Christ, I'll come with you, but, you know, let me bury my father first. And Christ says something that sounds just terribly callous. It's like, who is this guy? He says, well, let the dead bury the dead. Come on. Don't worry about that. And so in this particular passage in the Book of Kells, we see the lion appear. And it actually misplaces text, so it slows down your reading. It throws it the line above. And so in that moment, when Christ says that, it's a very difficult verse to understand. But if you think about that verse within the attributes of Christ, particularly him revealing himself only to those whom he wants to reveal himself to, so he's honoring the disciple or the person he's asked to be a disciple by showing his true nature. But I think the other more important attribute is Christ's control over life and death, his power over life and death. And because he has power over life and death, burying the dead isn't so important. Mm-hmm. That being part of the faith is. So I think when we start looking at these images and thinking about how invention is working with them, is that they're really having a dialogue with the text itself and giving you this collection of things to juxtapose so that you can keep thinking, turning things over in your mind in a very focused way that can lead to understanding and perspective.
Right.
So so as a poet, thinking about invention has me moving in and thinking through these issues with imagery that, again, I don't know if I can quite prove this is what they're up to and doing, but I'm collecting an awful lot of evidence from the pages themselves and the imagery to suggest that this is really what they were doing. Because when somebody would join a monastery, and particularly the Columban Monastery, where the Book of Kells was most likely made, this would have been a true focus of their lives, to enter into, boy, the top of the goal was to perfect the mind and the heart, and so that you could have this oneness with Christ, and to have imagery play itself out in the Book of Kells. And the Book of Kells has over 2,000 unique decorated initials in it alone. I mean, how do you invent imagery on that scale unless you have some standard techniques and practices to do that?